Right now on Robin Hood Radio, it is time for the Frickin' Frack of Nick and Nack, Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys. You can find them, of course, on the web at TQAG.com and right here on Robin Hood Radio. Good morning there, Mr. Luke.
Well, good morning, Mr. Miles.
You have had quite 24 to 48 hours, and I'm not talking about the tropical storm, but how is our good friend the Silver Chef doing this morning?
He is doing well, and it was a little bit of a traumatic experience, but we got through it, and everybody is doing well. Just so everyone knows, Greg had a little bit of he had a 99% blockage in his coronary artery, and we got it perfectly in time. He woke me up. We called 911, and the emergency group got here. Boy, and they work with precision. I was really amazed how they just had it down. The team of them came in. And they were already transmitting his vitals and everything to the hospital, got him there and right into the cath lab. And so we were very fortunate that he caught it at a really good time. And he was released from the hospital last night. So he's resting comfortably. He's fine. He's got to call all the doctors. This is going to be the difficult part, is trying to make appointments and see doctors and do things. But he should be 100% and time for a little bit of lifestyle changes. That's all.
I was going to
move some things.
Well, you know, I was going to say I was in contact with Tim yesterday, and at one point Tim said, we're both going to be on the air tomorrow morning. So I said to myself, man, I've known people who've had this procedure, and the next day they're kind of like they were hit by a baseball bat.
He felt last night, he felt good. And I think it was also he was just excited to get out of the hospital. Yeah. And we picked up dinner and had a meal, fine. And then he was starting to just get a little tired. And I said, that's fine. I said, let's go. You know, I got the dogs out and went to bed, and we went to bed early. And this morning, I said, well, why don't you just come and just go for just a little bit of a walk, you know, with the dogs. And he did a little bit, but that, you know, that really just kind of put him down. So he's like, I think I'm just going to rest. And I said, that's fine. Listen to your body, people. That's the big message here. You got to really know what your body's telling you.
Well, I think we're going to have now a heart healthy silver chef in the future.
I think that series is coming, Marshall. I think you are correct.
Well, I'm so glad that everything was caught in time.
Thank you.
And that worked out. And I'm glad that you probably took a little bit of, I think, control wise, that you've controlled him, just, you know, relax a little bit and settle into the next section of your life, which is going to be different. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. And he knows that. And so we're just going to move on. But the part that is still the same is that I do have a little story for you about some things that sold at auction. Have you ever heard of the Gruby company? It's a Gruby pottery. Have you ever heard of that, Marshall?
I have.
They very commonly, it has a very matte green finish. It's very simple in design. The company itself was founded in Boston, Massachusetts, and it began back in 1898. I mean, it only lasted for a very short time. I think the doors closed in around 1920. So it was a very small production, but that green matte finished vase was the one that most people see. That's what we see commonly as appraisers. Well, there was just an auction at Sotheby's, and they did a whole arts and crafts period, and they were doing design, arts and crafts and design. And there were a number of different pots that came up and vases from different companies. But there was one that was by the Gruby company, Gruby Fiance company. The vase itself was produced around 1900, and they had it estimated at 7,000 to 9,000. Well, turns out that this particular vase had a rare glaze. I mean, it is the first time that it has ever been seen, and they said it's probably the last time. It's the only one that is known in existence, and you've heard us talk a lot about whenever there's the only one, that does make a difference. So there was a fierce 45-minute bidding war. Now, you've watched auctions on television. You see, I mean, it's anywhere between maybe a minute to 3 minutes per lot is, I mean, that can take a long time. If there's bidding wars, it might be 5 minutes. But 45 minutes of bidding, and the final, I guess the gavel came down, the final number was $431,250. So you know that there were a number of collectors that recognized that this was the piece to have. Now, don't go thinking and be looking for Gruby pottery and thinking that your piece is going to sell for $400,000+, because this was a rare glaze that was on the pot, and that's why the bidders just went crazy. But can you imagine? I mean, I can't imagine just even being in the room and 45 minutes of just active, fierce bidding. That must have been amazing.
Now, let me ask you a question there. Do sometime bidders lose track of where they are in the excitement, all of a sudden they bid way too high?
Or they will be the underbidder. You know, like they're like, okay, wait, where are we now? What? Because they just got outbid, and in that excitement, they're like, okay, wait a minute, he just bid 375,000. Do I want to go to 400? You know, and that's where they want to know, like, what's the next bid? Where are we? What's going on? Because they may have had a top number in their mind, okay, I only want to bid up to this amount. And maybe they stretched it one extra bid. And now they're like, oh, do I really want to go for this? Or do I just want to let him have it? And yeah, that does happen. And I've had that happen as an auctioneer where people say, wait, where are we again? What's the next increment? Especially when you get to that level, because you're used to if it's going by $100 increments or $250 increments, but when it's going by 20 and, you know, maybe $20,000 or $25,000 increments, then it becomes, oh, wait, where am I? Because then you do get caught up in that excitement.
Yeah. Now, how big was this vase? I mean, sometimes was it a small one or a large one?
It was probably average size. So it was in the middle. So it was probably, they don't give the exact dimensions, but I did post a photo on my Facebook page, and you can see it next to, it's sitting on a ledge with three others. So I would say it's probably probably 8 inches tall, you know.
Now, is this something whoever buys it, do they lock it up because it's got it just has to be susceptible to be broken.
Yes. And this opens the door. And that's a very good question, Marshall, is that it also opens the door for insurance, because here's the big thing, is that you do need to have an appraisal, and it needs to be explained that this is why this is worth almost $500,000 for replacement, is because it's irreplaceable, is that there's not going to be another one that is the same size, design, and glaze. That's what makes it important. And that's what the insurance company has to understand, especially not so much when they write the policy, because most insurance companies, they'll say, oh, okay. But when you have a damage, then they have to justify why that value is set at that particular level. And this is where, as an appraiser, when we are doing appraisals of these types of items, especially when you have a rare item like this, is to make sure that you include all of the cataloging, so that you're not just saying it's a Gruby pottery vase, because, you know, if you look those up, you'll see, oh, okay, well, even rare examples may sell for $10,000, not $431,000, or, you know, to be insured for $500,000. So you have to explain the context. What makes this so valuable? What are those value characteristics? And that's what's really important here. And that needs to be detailed in the appraisal report and communicated effectively, so that they understand, oh, this is an extremely rare, and you know, and that's what you have to get across. And I think that things like eBay or online auctions, even when they were people, everybody was listing and they were putting rare in their example. And it's like, no, it's not so rare. You know, your meat is rare. That piece is not rare. You know, it's like, wait a minute. And the major part is that that word has gotten overused or has been overused. And when you actually have a rare piece, so it's when you cry wolf too much, then when you actually have the wolf shows up, then it's not as effective. And I think that's where you have to really go into a lot of description and explain why this piece really sells for so much. And that's the important part. And yes, people will display these. I know a number of collectors, they probably will have it in some sort of glass case or plexi case or some where you're not just handling it. I'm sure this isn't going to be handled. And I'm sure if I were the buyer, I would drive wherever I live to go pick it up and drive it home. I would not rely on shipping for this.
No, I would not. But you, before we wrap up, you bring up a very good point about the English language. The word, there's so many words in the English language, like rare, that mean totally different things, even though it's the exact same spelling, the exact same
Sure.
word. And that's what makes the English language such a screwed up language to other people all
Yes.
over the world, because rare means three or four different things.
Yes. And really, to get the full impact in this particular situation, that's where the description of why it is so desirable and what makes it such a one of a kind piece, that's really what it is. And it's not so much about being that descriptive word rare in that instance. You need to really fill that in. You can't just say it's a rare piece of pottery. It's like, okay, why? You have to know the background. And the company itself, I mean, Gruby, they've won a lot of international competitions back there at the 1900 exposition, and their arts and crafts tiles. I mean, they're really well known for a lot of their design and their arts and crafts work. But it's the simplicity of the design and the glaze that really makes a difference when you're looking at pottery. And for this particular company, that was a rare glaze, and that's what really drove the price. So interesting.
All right. Well, give our best again to your partner in crime there, and tell him that we're all thinking about him, and I'll be awaiting for his first heart healthy recipe on the Silver Chef website.
I certainly will. I certainly will. Thanks a lot for all the well wishes, and he'll be back next week.
All right, Tim, take care.
Wonderful. Thanks, Mark. Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Marshall. Take care. Bye.
Tim Luke and Greg Strom, of course, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with appraise this year on Robin Hood Radio.